We are back for the second half of our program today, discussing coal ash litigation, environmental damage, expenses on the economic level, and much more with Ula Reeves and Joan Walker with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. The whole sordid affair, which is probably a trite way to put it, but it keeps getting more sordid day after day, includes not just unknown bureaucrats, it goes all the way to the governor's office.
This bill really brought to light a lot of questions about who had been watching over the coal ash sites in North Carolina and why this was allowed to happen. And folks started asking questions about Diener and Governor McCrory. So in the past few years, we've really seen, as folks probably know, Diener move towards being more friendly towards the polluters and industry that they are supposed to regulate. So folks started asking questions about Secretary Skvarla that was appointed by Governor McCrory and of Governor McCrory himself. As it came to light through this story, McCrory worked for Duke for 28 years and begs the question of how would this be allowed to happen in our state? So folks started asking Governor McCrory those questions pretty early on, and we saw the governor get pretty defensive about the questions for his ties to Duke Energy. He got really defensive on a press conference at February 14th and refused to even answer questions regarding the coal ash spill and Diener.
One aspect of that that came to light along the way, and I'm pretty sure I'm rounding it off, but Duke Energy put up $1 million for his election campaigns. I guess there were two, but $1 million in political contributions.
That's what we heard overall.
That might explain a little cooperation from the governor.
It could, and we started asking those questions, and again, as Ula said, we weren't the only ones. The environmental community weren't the only ones who were asking questions about the coziness that we were seeing between Diener and McCrory and Duke, and there was a criminal investigation that was started. Interestingly enough, that criminal investigation first started out with subpoenas just related to the Dan River spill, and then eventually, a week later, expanded that criminal investigation to include all of North Carolina's coal ash impoundments and specific state and Duke employees. Now, no one has been charged with anything. The criminal investigation, the grand jury, has just started meeting last week, and we don't have any news from who's been called or what questions are being asked behind closed doors. But it does back up that things do look very suspicious from the outside looking in.
Considering this administration's activities with Diener while in office, and the one that comes to mind right off is the shakeup at Diener itself. There were a lot of changes in the last North Carolina legislature that actually our southern community has an archive program on a lot of these details, but one aspect directly here was the change in status for a significant number of Diener employees, and I believe the rounded numbers were previously 29 were political appointees, and now 178 are political appointees, which means if they don't like you, don't like the work, and don't like the results, you can just be fired.
Yeah, we've seen massive cutbacks at Diener's offices, massive reorganizations at the Division of Water Quality and the Division of Air Quality, tremendous amount of shuffling of work in a way that makes it very difficult for those employees to get their jobs done and to actually protect the environment. And the attitude that has changed, from my understanding, at the agency is also one of cooperation more with the utilities and the industries rather than protecting the environment first and foremost. Secretary Skvarla refers to Duke and the likes as their customers.
No longer the environment, nor the citizens of North Carolina. I'm sure he would dispute that face to face, but that's the bottom line. They're cozying up to the commercial customers.
Yeah, and the water laws were actually rewritten last year in a way that dramatically reduced the division's ability to protect water from the likes of coal ash contamination. Everything that's happening at this Dan River spill site can directly link back to the downfall of the agency that we are seeing under McCrory's leadership. So we're finally seeing now Governor McCrory and Diener backtracking a little bit and trying to cover themselves and say, okay, this Dan River spill was a horrible tragedy and we need to do something to clean up this site and also ash impoundments around the state. Governor McCrory issued a call to Duke Energy to explain how they would deal with cleaning up ash impoundments around the state, and that was due to the governor's office on March 16th. And that is a statement probably many people saw the news, that one of the ways in which Duke Energy proposes to possibly deal with ash problems is to retire some additional coal plants. So that's potentially a good new development. Retiring a coal plant doesn't take care of the ash problem. They need to be cleaned up regardless of whether they are an operational plant or a retired plant. As Joan said in the beginning, the Dan River site was already a retired facility.
If additional plants are retired, that does reduce the pure volume of the toxic coal ash being produced, but it doesn't do anything for what we already have.
That's right, yeah. Retiring a facility just means you're not going to put any more into that particular impoundment, but it doesn't change the fact that the impoundments are unlined. They're probably already leaking. They've got these old corrugated pipes underneath in many locations. We don't necessarily know how many have that exact same structure as Dan River. If they retire the facility, they still need to deal with the ash waste as the hazardous material that it is and put it into some kind of a lined waste facility that is away from waterways and is a certified landfill that will be monitored.
This whole unfolding timeline with the Dan River spill and our conversation so far actually expands beyond the Dan River site with the additional scrutiny of coal ash impoundment facilities. There's the leakage being found at other locations.
You know, a lot of folks started paying a lot more attention to what was going on the ground at all of the different Duke sites. One thing that we heard come out pretty early on when folks were asking, well, if there's a stormwater pipe under the Dan River impoundments, where are they across the rest of the state? And I remember seeing Duke say that this was the only one and there weren't going to be any other problems. Come to find out, now the last count I saw was 8 similar pipes running under coal ash impoundments across the state. And around March 1st, a leaking pipe under the Cliffside plant in Rutherford County was found. The leaking pipe is very close to the Broad River, though not flowing directly into the Broad River. And just recently, some test results came in from Waterkeeper showing that that discharge does have extremely high levels of arsenic and other toxic heavy metals, again, associated with the coal ash in those basins.
And it seems reasonable to assume that this leak has been going on for a while. They may say, well, we may have found it on such and such a date, but it's been leaking.
Mm-hmm, that's right. These impoundments probably have been leaking for a long time. That's absolutely right. There's another plant in the eastern part of the state at Cape Fear that Duke has been found to be pumping coal ash wastewater out of, kind of under the radar. They don't have permission to do this necessarily, and they've been doing it as part of their quote-unquote routine maintenance. And estimates show that at least 61 million gallons of coal ash wastewater have been pumped by Duke into the Cape Fear River. That's illegal pumping that's happening. There's no permit for that. In addition, at the Cape Fear plant, a crack has been found in the impoundment. Right now, it doesn't seem to be leaking into the Cape Fear River, but it's obviously in pretty bad shape.
In terms of the Cape Fear pumping fiasco that was discovered, I believe, by an overflight of the Riverkeeper Alliance, one of the groups, I'm not sure who did that.
The Waterkeeper Alliance.
Waterkeeper Alliance. Mm-hmm. This operation has been going on for months. 60-plus million gallons has been pumped out, and it suggested that because they did the illegal pumping, that is what's caused the crack in the dam.
Well, I think that just goes to show that these old unlined impoundments, there's no way to operate them in a way that is safe. There really isn't. You know, these are just holes in the ground next to the river. And a lot of times they're in previous wetlands. It's unstable soil, unstable conditions, and they really need to be moved to modern disposal facilities.
From the initial Dan River spill, and about 4 weeks later, Diener decides that, well, maybe they should issue a few citations, a couple of violations. That seems like an awful long time for such an obvious problem.
Yeah, it does. It's not like they were wondering if there was a violation or not. It was an obvious violation of all their permits and the Clean Water Act. So, yeah, on March 3rd, Diener did issue some violations for the Dan River spill. Those could trigger fines up to $25,000 a day, though to my understanding, Duke Energy hasn't had to pay anything for the Dan River spill yet.
No one knows what it's going to cost to clean it up. Obviously, many, many, many millions of dollars. The question that's on a lot of people's minds is, who pays for this? Duke Energy, the ratepayers, the shareholders, the taxpayers, and the estimates, as I understand it, are that in about a five-year period, they've made close to $10 billion in profits. That's a lot of money in profits to then turn around and say, well, we're going to stick it to the ratepayer.
You're bringing up a very good point and something that has been in the news a lot lately about this issue, Ned. Lynn Good came out about a week or 2 weeks ago now and said that the customers will be bearing the burden, the cost of cleaning up impoundments around the state, that they would take responsibility for the Dan River site.
And Lynn Good is the CEO of Duke Energy.
Thank you. The issue is actually not so much about whether or not this is normal, right? Because the normal procedure for Duke Energy to recoup the costs of environmental compliance is through ratepayers. This is what they do. This is how the state has set it up for them through the North Carolina Utilities Commission. Duke Energy recoups the costs of environmental compliance, retrofits, and whatnot, and this is standard operating procedure. It's not so much that it's an unusual idea or request for Duke Energy to want to recoup those costs. The question in my mind is really, is it fair? Did Duke Energy actually anticipate the costs of managing coal ash? Because coal ash is an unregulated substance, they have not had to consider the same kind of retrofit compliance or, you know, whatever. Normally with air pollution, we see scrubbers and selective catalytic reduction devices and, you know, other things that they have to actually install on the coal plant in order to reduce those air emissions, and those have a particular dollar figure associated with them. But with ash impoundments, we don't know exactly what that cleanup cost is going to have to be for all utilities. So the question is just really, did Duke plan ahead to deal with the ash management, or are the customers getting a shoddy deal where Duke Energy knew all along that there was a problem and that they were going to need to maintain these facilities and that they actually are some kind of hazardous waste problem? I think that is yet to be seen. Some of these issues are going to come out in the wash over the coming months and even years.
But if it was a surprise, if there hadn't have been lawsuits for 5 years, if there hadn't have been many, many organizations and outfits and so forth saying there's a problem here, this goes back arguably decades, but certainly in terms of immediate attention, it's 5 years, maybe 10 years, that they've been making a tremendous profit off of all of this by ignoring the problem. And that's where it gets a little bit murkier.
I don't disagree with you. And as we talked about in the beginning, Kingston really was everybody's first wake-up call, and we should have dealt with the problem at that time. Because EPA has continued to drag their feet and not actually offer any solid regulation and guidelines for how to deal with these ash impoundments, the utilities have continued to get away with doing zero. But that doesn't make it okay. It doesn't, you know, it's continued the racket of people being able to get away with saying that coal ash is the likes of dirt. And that is
not the case.
Outrageous.
That is a stretch of the imagination. We are getting close on time. What's the update at this stage of the game?
There's so much happening, so who knows what will happen between the time of this recording and when it airs. But the latest is on March 20th, SACE, our organization, and several other organizations did file a motion to intervene on the state's enforcement action on the Dan River spill, because we do want to be at the table to make sure that all the ash gets cleaned up from the river and those impoundments get moved away permanently. On March 21st, Diener completely withdrew their controversial sweetheart deal with Duke. So that was what Ula mentioned earlier.
That $99,000.
The $99,000 with no action to clean up any ash anywhere. And now they have completely withdrawn that. It is no longer on the table. And what we're seeing now is that North Carolina lawmakers, several different lawmakers, have come out and said that they're committed to writing some state legislation to try and deal with coal ash in the legislature. So hopefully one of those efforts, if not more than one, will bear fruit.
The Dan River spill really gives us an opportunity to consider the serious problems across the region. And we know the Southeast is home to 40% of the nation's coal ash impoundments, and they are extremely problematic. And we are home to 21 of the nation's 45 high-hazard dams. That's an EPA classification for if they were to fail in the way that Kingston failed, they would cause loss of life and contribute to serious issues downstream. Here in North Carolina, we have 50 impoundments that we need to address, and the Dan River spill is really that kickoff, that warning for us. Obviously, it has created a tremendous amount of attention as to the problems.
It really is a remarkably clear example of the so-called external costs.
We are all bearing the burden, the externalities of coal in our daily lives. Coal from cradle to grave is an incredibly dirty way to produce energy. And for me, the big picture reminder of what's happened is that we have got to stop burning coal. We know that the mountains of West Virginia are being destroyed, and Kentucky waterways there are being destroyed by the simple mining and washing. I mean, the West Virginia chemical spill was coal-related. That was a chemical that we use to wash coal before we burn it. Everywhere along the line of coal, we have problems related to public health and the environment.
Ula, if folks would like to get in touch with you, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, the website.
We are at cleanenergy.org.
We also have a coal ash specific website that shows all of the coal ash sites throughout the Southeast, so you can go there and find out if coal ash is in your backyard or where you like to play out on the rivers and waterways. So that is southeastcoalash.org, and you can also follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook for the latest coal ash news.
Joan Walker, High Risk Energy Coordinator, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you.
And Ula Reeves, High Risk Energy Program Director, thank you as well for taking the time and helping us get a handle on this story.
Thank you so much, Ned.
Thanks for listening. Archived programs are available at oursoutherncommunity.org. Your comments, criticisms, and suggestions for programming are encouraged at info@oursoutherncommunity.org. I'm your host, Ned Ryan Doyle. Thanks for joining us, and have a great week.